So perhaps one of the answers is the very, very subtle change in the nature of power. In our primitive days, power was simply physical. You know, the classic caveman stereotype, but basically, power was physical. As resources became more important, as we became agricultural and territorial, access to resources became a source of power. Those who controlled the resources were the most powerful. Today, more than ever, knowledge is power. Information is power. Whoever has control over information, or for that matter, misinformation, has control over the population. And particularly if this knowledge is subtle and under the radar and invisible, it's even more powerful. We call it weapons of mass distraction. So if we want to understand how the brainwashing machine got stuck on spin, we need only look at an unsung unhero of the 20th century, Edward Bernays. Edward Bernays was not well known, even though Life magazine once voted him one of the 1,000 most influential people of all time. Doesn't that make you curious as to who this guy was? Well, first of all, he was a nephew of Sigmund Freud, so he was steeped in psychology. He was also a great admirer and student of Pavlov, which tells you something. And he was the father of what is called public relations. He lived a long life. He lived to be 104 years old. He was born in 1891 and died in 1995. So his life pretty much spanned almost the entire 20th century. Bernays was actually the first to apply unconscious programming to mass communication. And his first public relations job when he was in his early 20s was to sell World War I. If you've ever seen those posters, Beat Back the Hun with Liberty Bonds, that shows a menacing German soldier, that was his invention. The marketing slogan for World War I, Making the World Safe for Democracy, he made that up too. And what he did was he recycled these old stories that were not true. And they were all stories of atrocities that Germans did. And incidentally, in the lead up to the first Iraq War in 1990, George Bissinger did the same thing. He told these stories about how Saddam Hussein and the Iraqi soldiers were killing babies. Totally not true, proven to be not true. But those are the kind of stories that generate our anger, our energy. They energize people. And as we know, when we get fearful and angry, our intelligence actually diminishes, right?
Yeah, it's very interesting because people are generally aware of it. But when we are in a happy state, we're in a state of growth. And when we get afraid, we get in a state of protection. And when we get in a state of protection, it completely changes the blood flow to the body. Because when you're in a state of growth, you're nourishing the viscera, which is really the organs that take care and maintain our health, etc. But when we start to get afraid, we want to send the blood to the arms and legs, because the arms and legs are what we're going to use to fight or flight, escape the issue or deal with the problem. So the hormones and stress cause the blood vessels in the gut to squeeze shut, which forces the extra blood to go to the periphery where we're going to nourish that fight or flight behavior. Well, interesting enough, the same hormones affect blood vessels in the brain. Because when we're in a state of happiness and growth, we're using our conscious reasoning and our thinking and our logical thought. But in a state of reaction to a threat, conscious reasoning is not very helpful because it's a very slow process. So basically what happens is, in the presence of stress hormones, blood vessels in the forebrain, which is the center of conscious reasoning and logic, are squeezed shut, just like the blood vessels in the gut. And this forces the blood to go to the hindbrain. Well, the hindbrain is reflex and reactive behavior. So basically it says that the moment you get under stress, you actually shut down the thinking processes of the conscious mind and open up the reactive, reactionary processes of the hindbrain. So as you said, simply, when we're under stress, we become less intelligent.
And that has been part of the mass programming, certainly around war, getting people fearful about war. Anyway, World War I was over, and then Edward Bernays wrote a book called, quite simply and bluntly, Propaganda. That was what his book was called. And he decided to turn his energy to the peacetime uses of psychological manipulation. Now, here's a quote from his book, Propaganda. It was the astounding success of propaganda during the war that opened the eyes of the intelligent few, in all departments of life to the possibilities of regimenting the public mind. He described the masses as a herd that needed to be led, and he wrote pretty frankly about, quote, controlling the masses without having them know it. Bernays had been hired by the American Tobacco Company, makers of Lucky Strike cigarettes. They were interested in expanding their marketplace. So the first thing that Bernays did was he got doctors to tell people that smoking cigarettes would help them lose weight. So the first people who promoted smoking in the 1920s were doctors. Not a cough in the carload, that was the Lucky motto. But anyway, that wasn't enough. And so his next project was to get women to smoke. And so in 1929, in the Easter Parade in New York and in a number of other cities, he got these debutantes, attractive young women, to dress as suffragettes, because after all, we were only less than 10 years before the women had gotten the right to vote, to dress as suffragettes and march in the Easter Parade smoking Luckies. Prior to that time, women smoking, that was outrageous. But somehow, creating a situation, a public relations gambit like that, to get women smoking in public, young, attractive, upper-class women smoking, and we've seen the result. You've come a long way, baby. On the darker side, although that's fairly dark enough to get people to poison themselves with cigarettes, another Bernays project worth noting. 1951, he was hired by the United Fruit Company to help them with a problem in Guatemala. And what was the problem? The problem was democracy. The president-elect Jacobo Arbenz had vowed to initiate land reform. And of course, the largest landowner in Guatemala was the United Fruit Company, and they took exception to this. So they hired Bernays to drum up support in the United States for a military action to overthrow the Arbenz government. So what he did was he arranged for American reporters to be flown down to Guatemala, and he staged communist riots, quote unquote, for their benefit. He had a book published, which was published anonymously, which talked about the communist threat in Latin America, gave them a copy of the book. And before you know it, I mean, this is, of course, the time of the McCarthy era, early 1950s. So there's a lot of paranoia about communism. Never mind that Arbenz, while he was painted as a communist, his avowed goal had been to turn Guatemala into a modern capitalist country. As a result, the CIA action overthrew the Guatemalan government in 1954, and that resulted in a military dictatorship and a reign of terror lasting 28 years. During that period of time, thousands of Guatemalans died and millions were left homeless. Now we can look at Bernays. In some ways, it's tempting to look at him as a hugely talented individual. I mean, look at what he created. Look at how he was able to use his intelligence this way. But in another sense, he applied the law of the jungle to prove the law of the jungle. Human beings are ruthless and evil, and here is my own ruthless evil to prove it. No wonder we've become so susceptible to sociopathogens. So the question is, we call them weapons of mass distraction. What are these weapons distracting us from? Well, first of all, I believe they're distracting us from our true human nature. There was a study done in Poland after the fall of communist rule in Poland. His name was Lobachevsky, but he published something called A Study of Ponerology, P-O-N-E-R-ology, which is the study of evil. And he was curious as to how this totalitarian system established itself in Poland. Very interesting statistic he came up with. 25% of those who had been in the secret police later ended up in mental institutions. Why might that be the case? Might it be the case that the things that they were forced to do as members of the secret police were so inhuman and anti-human that it actually made them crazy? Certainly a possibility. So part of what the weapons of mass distraction are distracting us from is our own kind-hearted nature, the kindness of humankind. and how difficult it is for us to do these nefarious deeds that somehow we get caught up in doing. If you think about, if anybody has seen the Enron movie, The Smartest Guys in the Room, do you think that everybody who worked for Enron was a stone sociopath? Or could it be that working in a sociopathic institution, by virtue of that, they had to adopt that culture, but it went against their general grain of who they are? And I think that brings us to the final distraction. These weapons of mass distraction, which are now falling apart as we're seeing lies being exposed time and time again, every day, every week. What they've been distracting us from is our true power, the true nature of human nature, our power to evolve, our power to become cells in the organism called humanity. And there's the exciting story of our own power to evolve, our own true nature, and our own evolutionary destiny